What do you think about politics? Whatever the country you are in right now, chances are something interesting is going on in its political sphere. Donald Trump, Brexit, European elections, Chinese surveillance of Uyghur minority, and plans of world domination, protests in Sudan, security concerns and new security politics in Asia, for example, in Sri Lanka, Russia, Vladimir Putin, with the very recent arrest of one of the major investigative journalists, and the public protest that waking up after this arrest. So many interesting things. And the real question is, what does it all mean? Is it something that it's actually new? Are we living in a kind of a completely different world from what existed 20, 30, 40 years ago? Or is it just a new form of something that we've seen before? What does it mean for us in our generation and the next generations? Can we do something with it? Can we understand it better? I believe that yes. My name is Igor Liss. I'm a French expert in international relations, and I work for a company called Gambit, which is a discreet agency that helps politicians and companies in Europe with consultancy and project management when they operate cross-border. And by doing this job, me and my colleagues have discovered a lot of interesting facts, really interesting ideas that I would like to share with you, and that will help, I hope, better understand what's going on and enrich your understanding. And I invite everyone who's listening to this podcast to react and start a discussion of what you heard, because no, at least little of ideas have objective value. It's a discussion, and I will really be glad if what I will be telling about the tools and measures and different types of analysis that we will propose to you will invite you for a reflection. So, welcome to Neopolitics. So, the title of this podcast series is Neopolitics. What is it? It's a good question, because I don't think there is actually not a single definition. The term dates back to the middle of the 20th century, where there was so-called neopolitical movement in the United States, but it's not very, very known even in the US, even less in Europe. The first actual definition of this word that goes close to what I believe neopolitics should mean was proposed by Barbara Cruickshank several years ago in an article about new ways of governance. And basically, what Barbara Cruickshank says is that neopolitics is the politics in a state of constant change. And I believe this word change is extremely important. For me, neopolitics is, as its name suggests, is a new type of politics. It's everything. It's not something that replaces politics. It's not something that says, okay, you guys got politics before, and now it's neopolitics. It's rather a layer of everything that's new in political theory and practice, something that has never existed before. Just like, for example, gunpowder or aviation or artillery completely changed the way that we do warfare, but the concept of warfare still stays the same since Sun Tzu and the Art of War. Same with neopolitics. Politics still exists, but there is a layer of something that is completely new and unprecedented. This layer is brought by a series of changes that we will explore in this and further podcasts. The main changes that are non-cyclic, which means they never actually appeared before, because the humanity didn't have the technological the technological means to produce this type of changes are, for me, big data, how the data is collected and used in decision making by automated processes, artificial intelligence analysis, and different means of data collection, is the change of the representative corps through social networks specifically, but not only. So the way how the concept of people representing other people is dramatically changing while we're watching it, without maybe seeing it, but there is a dramatic change, and we will talk about that. And the third concept is what I call neo-truth, because a lot of people call that post-truth, you know, like it was the Oxford Word of the Year, I believe, in 2016, post-truth, something that was introduced by Donald Trump's and basically repeated mentioning of fake news. I think that post-truth is not a correct term, because it's like with neopolitics, there is no new truth. We don't live in a world where truth doesn't exist anymore. So it's like not post-apocalyptic world, like something happened and now we have post-truth. I think that there is a new type of truth, or to be more specific, a new relationship to what truth is. This is what I call neo-truth. And these three major changes, big data, the changing concept of representation, and the new relationship with facts and new understanding of truth, is what makes neopolitics neo. The reason for which I want to talk about it, and I want to give birth to discussions on it, is because there is an important demand for actually understanding what the heck is going on. I remember there was this article in the New York Times about the Donald Trump State of the Union speech that was actually, as you might remember, that the speaker of the newly elected at that time Chamber of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, was against Trump coming and delivering that speech to the Congress. And so I was reading this article, and I went to the comments section, and the most voted comment by the community of the New York Times readers was this very short comment where this person just said, "Well, I honestly think we all know what the State of the Union is." And it had like hundreds and hundreds of upvotes on this comment section. And I think that this is something that intuitively we all know about the world. If we observe politics, and if we're looking at what's going on, we kind of all know what the State of the Union is. We know what's going on. We know that there's something going on, because there's a lot of things that are happening, and they are either unexpected or expected, but don't go as planned. Just take the Brexit, for example. First, the result of the referendum was quite unexpected, and then the way it was managed is just creating more and more uncertainties that impact more and more activities, be them social, economical, cultural, or political. And this is happening everywhere, and a lot of people are lost. I mean, there are even politicians, including like top level politicians, who feel kind of lost because they don't know what to expect anymore, and how will the government work? How will the governance work? How will the society function in 10, 20, 30, 50 years? And I think this is why talking about this neopolitical reality, this reality that's built by these new factors, is extremely important. Two major reasons for this importance are, for me, the first is the reduction of suffering of human beings. You know, it's something that people like Jordan Peterson would say, like, it's important to reduce suffering in this world of world of malevolence, as Peterson says. And I think this is a major task for a politician, is to bring good to people. This doesn't work always this way, almost never actually, but this is the idea. This is to create a good. And by understanding what's going on, and by going deeper and deeper, we will be able to improve the amount of good that the politics provides. And the second reason is that we have to develop our understanding of the of the world, because even if we're not much into politics, and or even we're not at all into politics, we somehow, just by being citizens of a country, by exercing any kind of activity, by working, by studying, by traveling, by walking on the streets, we give a certain power of attorney to politicians about the decision making that concern whole populations, basically in a certain to a certain extent the whole of humanity. And we should do that knowingly, even if we don't want to be in the politics, we don't want to dive into this political swamp, which is totally understandable. We should knowingly give a part of our power and a part of our decision making to the politicians, and we can only do that if we understand the process that are going on. There is this kind of a duality in an analyzing political context. You know, in philosophy and psychology, there is a big difference stated by Carl Jung and his friends. Carl Jung is a very famous Swiss psychologist from the early 20th century. This is a duality between the Western and the Eastern, let's say a Chinese vision of the world. Something between like the rationalities of the Enlightenment years of the 18th century and the some kind of Taoistic Chinese vision, which have something to do with the understanding of cause and effect principle. That Jung gives this very good example of a man walking on a shore, and he sees a hat brought by the sea to the shore. And Jung says that a Western person, by looking at his hat, would look at it and ask himself, well, what happened? Why is this hat here? Like, what from where does it come? Did it fall from the ship, from some boat, and just washed ashore? Well, that's curious. And a Taoistic person would look at this hat and he would say, what does it mean? What is the universe trying to tell me by showing me this hat on this shore? And I think with politics, it as in life, maybe in general, it's important to combine these two approaches, and by analyzing things, to understand, on the one hand, when something happens, some event happens, something, some decision, some happening takes place. On the one hand, we have to understand why did it happen. What's the cause of this event? What kind of decision making? What kind of factual texture brought us to this happening? What people, for what reasons, and in what context decided that this will happen? And on the other hand, it's important to understand, what does it mean? What does it tell us about our future, about the but where are we at? What kind of trend or mega trend is in play here? What is going on? And by combining these two visions, we will be able to better understand and to better act upon any kind of political or social, cultural or economic action. Because to undertake better actions, we have to have a better understanding of the context, and we have to be able to better project them into the future. And to be able to do that, we have to understand these two things. We have to understand what's the cause, what are the causes of this particular thing, for example, the Brexit vote or the election of Donald Trump or the recent trade war, like the question of tariffs with, for example, tariffs with Mexico. Why is it like this? Like, what actually happened? What's the strategy here? What are the reasons for this? And on the other hand, what does it tell us about the world we're living in? What does it tell us about the, if we're going back to the tariffs in Mexico, for example, what does it tell us about where is the United States today? What the state of the of things, about the mentality, about the approaches, about the American society and about the Mexican society? What does it tell us about the people who are reacting to it in other countries, in Europe, in Africa, in Asia? What does it tell us about the global kind of thing, and what does it mean for us, for our future, that these things are happening? So this is what neopolitics is about, and this is what we are gonna this is what we're gonna try to understand. So we will start in the next podcast by exploring the concept of big data and how it's used, how these data are used in politics by political actors and political power brokers. We will then move to the intermediary corps, and we will discuss what does it mean today to be an intermediary corps, like a trade union or a political party or an association or an NGO. What does it mean today to represent other people, and how the social networks are completely changing the meaning of this, the meaning of representing someone? How today Twitter is as much a tool for political influence as a membership in a political party, in a certain sense. And we will discuss that. It's kind of controversial, and I will be happy to interact with you if you have comments and questions or remarks. And it would be, I think it's a really interesting topic. Then we will switch to to what I mentioned as neo-truth, this new relationship to facts, the kind of motivations and trusts that change their nature, especially in politics, because there is a there there was there has been a series of events that are not new as types. In history of humanity, we have, for example, the Iraq War and the American intervention in Iraq following this. You remember very famous Colin Powell's pseudo proof in the UN. Very well shown, by the way, in this recent movie called Vice, which I recommend if you haven't watched it. We will. This is not new. Like, this type of manipulation is not new to start a conflict and for economical or political reasons. But what's new is that the medias are now providing us more information about what's happening. They give us more perspective, and tools like YouTube, for example, allow people who vehicle a certain type of conspiracy theories to have huge audiences that they never had before. And this is very interesting, because this relationship with facts is probably in the is one is in the heart of what's going on in general, not just in politics, but in business and social life and cultural life everywhere. It's extremely interesting, and it will be a big topic later on. And we will end this first series of podcasts with a discussion on how these theoretical findings actually impact the political communication and political practice, how they can help, for example, someone get elected, and once elected, how can they help make the world a better place. So this is it. This is the end of the introduction to neopolitics. If you're interested in it a bit more, I can advise you to buy my book on Amazon. It's called, unsurprisingly, Neopolitics. It's written in French, but there is an English translation as well. And I hope to see you soon for the first actual podcast. I remind you that this is going to be a podcast of big data on big data in politics. And have a great day. Ciao.